What's going on, people? Welcome to the Damage Report. I am Francesca Fiorentini in for John Iadarola, who is on baby watch. Yes, so it is still a fantastic Monday. And joining me for this fantastic Monday, Rayvana, Rebel HQ contributor. What's going on, Ray?
I am so happy to be here with you today. I'm also super happy because my favorite team in the world gets to have their first match today. So it's a definitely a fantastic Monday.
Hell yeah. So that's Manchester United. I had Ray show me the jersey. Very exciting for you and your team. Exciting for us. We got a lot to dig into. Of course, maybe a fourth Trump indictment, Hunter Biden updates, updates from Maui. And then in the aftermath, a revenge porn lawsuit that will to end all revenge porn once and for all. So very excited about that. Also a new culture war drop. So get ready, hang on, it's a candy. So everyone, you know, put your suggestions and your thoughts out right now. And while you're at it, remember to be liking the stream, sharing the stream, doing all the things, sending in your comments. Of course, we got that Blue Apron gift card for the comment that I like most, because John's not here, so it is my turn, my time. Yes, send us all your super chats and all your things, and we're gonna get into it. But with that, Ray, are you ready?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, let's do it, with or without John. So Trump could be getting his fourth indictment this week. That is right. This time, however, they're text messages. Oh, it's so exciting. So this is the case in Georgia with Fannie Willis. And we know over the weekend that two witnesses received subpoenas. That's former Lieutenant Governor of Georgia, Jeff Duncan, as well as George Cheedy, who's an independent journalist. So this is all sort of a precursor to this Fulton County, or excuse me, this Coffee County indictment. And this is the one that's big, right? You guys remember, this is the one that's like RICO style, like Fannie Willis is going after, who is the Fulton County DA, is going after a lot of people. So kind of the opposite of what Jack Smith is doing on the federal level. So let's look into it. Atlanta area prosecutors investigating efforts to overturn the 2020 election results in Georgia are in possession of text messages and emails directly connecting members of Donald Trump's legal team to the early January 2021 voting system breach in Coffee County. Again, a dozen individuals are implicated in this. There is video footage of this, and BT dubs, this was one of those heavily Republican counties, which was always a head scratcher to a lot of us. So investigators in the Georgia criminal probe have long suspected the breach was not an organic effort sprung from sympathetic Trump supporters in rural and heavily Republican Coffee County, a county Trump won by nearly 70% of the vote. They've gathered evidence indicating it was a top-down push by Trump's team to access sensitive voting software, according to people familiar with the situation. Again, weird target considering how Republican it was, but hey, a con is a con. It just seemed like you're barking up the wrong tree, but that's all right. So how did this happen? What's the new information? It seems like in January of 2021, right? So a few days before, you know, the biggie, Catherine Fries, an attorney working with Giuliani, Sidney Powell, and other Trump allies, shared a written invitation to examine voting systems in Coffee County with a group of Trump allies. That group included members of Sullivan Strickler, a firm hired by Trump's attorneys to examine voting systems in the small, heavily Republican Georgia county, according to text messages obtained by CNN. That same day, Fries sent a letter of invitation to Coffee County, Georgia, to former NYPD Police Commissioner Bernie Carrick, who was working with Giuliani to find evidence that would back up their baseless claims of potential widespread voter fraud. Fries then notified operatives who carried out the Coffee County breach and others working directly with Giuliani that Trump's team had secured written permission, the texts show. So it's just one weirdo calling on another former dude who was at the NYPD to do the thing and blah, blah, blah. But it's all coming from the top down. It seems like the text messages are linking Giuliani and obviously Donald Trump, and specifically to what we have video evidence of, which was a bunch of people entering this this polling station and effectively taking computers out of it. The stuff that Republicans were dying to find Democrats doing, there's actual evidence of. Ravana, I'm curious about your thoughts about the strategy here by DA Fannie Willis going after like all of the goons versus just trying to focus on the big goon.
I think it's an excellent strategy. I think that I wanted to see at the federal level more of a wide net cast on who they can implicate, because so many people have been implicated. They've really kept it narrow to Trump and his aides, when I think that there are so many more people that could have been brought in. Of course, you know, a DA at this level, she probably has further aspirations in her career. And I'm not, of course, every DA has that. So, you know, this is probably, she's gonna help use it to catapult herself into, you know, a bigger role in the future. But I'm glad that she's doing it in this fashion, because all of these people have tried to undermine our democracy, and I'll say in the dumbest ways possible. Like the least tactful criminals all got together. Rudy Giuliani is like six rum and cokes deep at at 7 a.m. sending out emails like, okay, it's time to do our crimes. And everyone is replying like, yes, surely now is the correct moment to execute our criminal plan. So, I mean, to an extent, you know, the DA, she has to bring in all these people because it was so absolutely brazen. And I'm glad that she's being less, you know, specific in her targets, because all of these people, like I said, they did coordinate to undermine democracy in our country and chose the dumbest, not just the dumbest way to collude to do it, but the dumbest possible avenue through which they could try to overturn the election. Like, again, it's just inexplicable that the focus was this one county where Trump won.
I think maybe that was the tactic. It was just like, well, we know we can probably get away with this here because it's the one county where people are so loyal to Donald Trump that they'll do anything. And so even though it doesn't even help us strategically, just do something, right? And I'm sure that was coming from Donald Trump. Yeah, again, raging and throwing his, you know, ketchup filled steak at the wall and asking to find those votes, which we're going to get into later. But in case you guys needed some refreshing, this was the January 6th hearing that specifically talked about this effort from the top down to actually seize those voting machines. Take a look.
There was a point at which the president said something about, why don't you guys seize machines?
Mr. Rosen, the president asked you to seize voting machines from state governments. What was your response to that request?
That we had seen nothing improper with regard to the voting machines, and I told them that the real experts at that had been at DHS, and they had briefed us that they had looked at it and that there was nothing wrong with the voting machines, and so that was not something that was appropriate to do.
Yeah, Mr. Donahue, can you explain what the president did after he was told that the Justice Department would not seize voting machines?
The president was very agitated by the acting attorney general's response. The acting attorney general said that the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, has expertise in machines and certifying them and making sure that the states are operating them properly. And since DHS had been mentioned, the president yelled out to his secretary, get Ken Cuccinelli on the phone.
Right, so that's a bunch of attorney generals and DOJ officials, which, I mean, covering the January 6th hearings, they went on every kind of wild goose chase to please the president within what they felt was legally okay to do. And seizing the voting machines was not one of those things, sadly. Watching a bunch of weird YouTube links, they did it. They tried to follow up on some of the Italy Gate stuff, didn't bear out, but that one they could not comply with. But it was floated, Ray. It was floated, and so you know how like mob bosses work. You're not gonna do this for me, I'm gonna find someone who will, and that someone who will, Rudy Giuliani, this woman, Freese, and Sidney Powell. I mean, Sidney Powell was just ready, born ready, drunk on life. Doesn't need those rum and cokes before 6 in the morning. But let's go to Donald Trump's reaction to all this. So Donald Trump is fuming. Donald Trump is fuming at the idea that he's going to be indicted for a fourth time this week on criminal charges, this time from the Fulton County DA in Georgia, over what seems to be a top-down effort to seize voting machines from Coffee County, Georgia. And all of the ways that his stooges, Giuliani, Sidney Powell, were involved in that. So Trump, he was bleating, very, very mad at the Fulton County DA, saying this, why is phony, like in Perfect Phone Call, get it? Phony Fannie Willis. And I just putting a parens, get it, get my dumb joke. The severely underperforming DA of Fulton County, who is being accused of having an affair with gang member of, who is being accused of having an affair with a gang member of a group that she's prosecuting, leaking my name in regard to a grand jury pertaining to election fraud and irregularities that I say took place in Georgia. Oh, you want me to do that? I made a perfect phone call of protest. What does phony Fanny have to do with me? She should instead focus on the record number of murders in Atlanta. I'm white and rich, okay? It's white collar crime. We can do it. So this is her. This is him doing all the things, Rayvana. This is she's awful. Why isn't she focusing on murders in Atlanta? And also, she had an affair with a gang member. What? Okay. What is this? Where does he get this stuff? Like, who is like DMing him the memes and the like conspiracy theories that he's then just like bleeding out? But he was actually asked, and this we're gonna get into what happened in Iowa over the weekend. He was asked whether or not he would reach some sort of plea deal, given the fact that there's so much evidence in Georgia and the DA is mounting so much evidence against him. And here's what he had to say.
Is there any chance you take a plea deal in Georgia?
We did nothing wrong. We don't ever take a plea deal.
Yes, sir.
We don't take plea deals. It's a wise guy question.
Are you going to change this?
Mr. Wise Guy. We don't take plea deals because I did nothing wrong. It's called election interference. Yeah. You know what that is?
What's election interference? What you did or what's happening now? Oh, what's happening now? Because it seemed it was also an election when you did that anyway. Ray, there's more bleats. This is just a couple more. First of all, in regards to his perfect phone call, let's just recap. Let's remember what Trump said that we all could hear. Because honestly, out of all of these indictments, the Georgia indictment is probably the one that the public has the most insight into because of this so-called perfect phone call, where he's basically like, could you just do me a solid, Brad Raffensperger, Secretary of State, just find me some votes, bro. You're a Republican, I'm a Republican. What's not, we both hate migrants. What's not to love? Take a look.
So look, all I wanna do is this. I just wanna find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, because we won the state.
Yes, we won the state, but we just still need, see, sometimes winners, after they've won, they still need, well, they need the points to get, like Ray, today when Manchester United plays its first game, like even if they lose, heaven forbid, 2-0, like they'll still need, or even if, you know what I'm saying, like somehow it works.
Right. Yeah, they'll call up the refs association and be like, you know, we just needed 3 more points. Find 3 points because we won the match. We all know we won the match. So just find us the points.
Find the points. We won. You just change a little scorecard. Everyone's like, what? You're still whining about this 2 years later. Although that would be a true football fan thing to do. Trump kept on bleeding. I understand through illegal leaks to the fake news media that phony Fannie Willis, there we go, the DA of Fulton County, Georgia, wants desperately to indict me on the ridiculous grounds of tampering with the 2020 presidential election. No, I didn't tamper with the election. Those who rigged and stole the election were the ones doing the tampering, and they're the slime that should be prosecuted. I made a perfect phone call of protest. Why wasn't this fake case brought 2.5 years ago? Election interference. Because you were the president, a-hole. You were the president. And even if you weren't the president, you probably would be prosecuted for doing all this stuff anyway. If you're gonna lean on some stooges in a county to take voting systems out of a polling place. But you were also the president at the, you get that? No, he doesn't anyway. That is, but I guess we're just wise guys, Ray, if we question that. The walls, I don't know how many walls in the room there are to close in on Donald Trump. I feel we're kind of in an octagonal situation. But this is the week where we will yet get another indictment coming down the pike. Republicans have gotten their wish on Hunter Biden. Yes, there is now a special prosecutor that's been appointed to cover and follow the Hunter Biden money trail when it comes to all of his foreign dealings. So Republicans are obviously happy. Wait, what? I'm sorry. Oh no, I'm getting word that they're still mad. That's right, Republicans are pissed. Republicans are pissed that Special Prosecutor David Weiss was appointed by Attorney General Merrick Garland to continue his investigation into Hunter Biden's dealings after a plea deal around his tax fraud, effectively. After that plea deal fell through, which means the case is still wide open and it'll only get even deeper, which is actually what we thought Republicans were wanted, but no, they didn't. Here's Ted Cruz, real mad.
David Weiss either was an active participant in covering up this criminality and protecting Joe Biden in engaging in obstruction of justice. That's option one. Or option two, he wasn't the driver, he was just complicit. He was so weak that he couldn't stop the partisans in Maine Justice from turning it into a political effort to protect Joe Biden. Either case, he is a wildly inappropriate person to be a special counsel.
That's funny. That's very interesting that Ted Cruz would say that David Weiss is inappropriate to be the special counsel because a year ago, Cruz himself just so happened to sign a letter penned by Senator John Cornyn and sent out nearly a year ago when they and other Republicans implored Garland to give David Weiss the powers of a special counsel. But now it's not enough. It's like a child, you know, you give them ice cream and you put the sprinkles on. They're like, no, I wanted rainbow sprinkles. Obviously, they wouldn't want rainbow sprinkles because, you know, whoa. the woke Sunday movement, but no. So suddenly, Ray, they're moving the goalpost. And now I'm just gonna continue with Ted Cruz raging on Fox News because he doesn't, now it's not just about David Weiss, it's more than just David Weiss. Watch this.
We should have a special counsel, but number one, we should have a special counsel to investigate Merrick Garland.
Yes, we want, now we want another special counsel. And Merrick Garland gonna appoint a special counsel to investigate himself. But if he does that, then I'll also be mad because he would have to appoint himself a special prosecutor. And I've gotten lost in sort of the space-time continuum of what Republicans want out of this Hunter Biden investigation.
It is really funny to see Republicans get everything they ever wanted and to be so miserable about it. I mean, not just in this, like, you know, they won with the Supreme Court overturning, you know, the abortion protections, and then they didn't have the landslide victory they were supposed to have when it came time for the midterms. And I'll say, I think once again, like what we saw ahead of the midterms, they're massively missing the mark on this messaging. Their obsession with the Hunter Biden story, I think, is horrible politics for them. Fine by me if they want to mess themselves up ahead of this presidential election. But, and I said this on the main show on Friday, but I think it bears repeating, that most people can relate to having a family member or relative who has, you know, fallen victim to certain vices like Hunter Biden. And, you know, every time they try to reveal, oh, these are private messages between Joe Biden and his son Hunter, he just looks like a really great dad, like someone who just really loves his son and wants the best in the world for him. And, yes, you know, their messaging is just so far off, I think, from, you know, if they wanted to actually win this presidential election, you know, much like Bill Clinton's election in the 90s, it's the economy, stupid. Hit hard on that. That's what people care about. They don't want to see, you know, they don't care that much about Hunter Biden. I think polls have shown that most people, you know, aside from their hardcore QAnon base, do not care that much about Hunter Biden. I think all they're doing is making Joe Biden look more and more sympathetic because he is someone who, throughout his career in politics, really has not enriched himself. This is a man who took the Amtrak home every single day because he couldn't afford a house in Washington, D.C.
Right.
So he's not someone we've seen unjustly enrich himself, as opposed to people like Ted Cruz. So, you know, trying to paint him as this deeply corrupt individual who is somehow getting kickbacks from his son, not to say that he shouldn't be, his son shouldn't be prosecuted for the crimes he did commit. I'm fine with that, but like to try to constantly tie it to Joe Biden as if Joe Biden was somehow unfairly benefiting from, you know, what was really just tragedy upon tragedy he had to go through within his family and then how it affected his son. It just doesn't stick, especially when your candidate is the king of corruption himself, about to be four times indicted.
Totally. It is massive deflection and only makes me think more and more about the stuff that Trump's family did and Ivanka and Jared and the $2 billion Saudi deal that Jared sealed just weeks after leaving the Oval Office himself. By the way, which he never got security clearance to be in the first place. Oops, guess we're not gonna talk about that anymore. But just specifically, and then I wanna kick it over to my favorite part of Fox News. Yes, there's a favorite part. Last week, Merrick Garland said, we need the special prosecutor and a special counsel. So Merrick Garland tapped David Weiss, the US attorney in Delaware, who's been probing the financial and business dealings of the president's son. David Weiss, appointed by Donald Trump himself. He's overseeing the department's investigation. He said Weiss asked to be, Merrick Garland said Weiss asked to be appointed to the position and told him that, quote, in his judgment, his investigation had reached a stage at which he should continue his work. Now, what you get when you have a special counsel is you have more money, more funds to actually like go deeper. You can tap and more folks for to be subpoenaed, to testify to you. Again, you just unleash this world of resources that they didn't have before. So what is the problem? Why are we so mad? But don't take it from me. Take it to probably the best hire Fox News has made in a long time, and that is Jessica Tarlov of the Five, who has kind of been tapped to be the liberal voice, but who consistently makes amazing points in the face of a lot of BS. Here she is in a couple clips. Take a look.
The good thing, I guess, is it seems like it's going to be a good day for justice and that he's going to be fully investigated. It seems to me that David Weiss wanted this now because he wants to be able to charge him in California and in DC, which he wouldn't have been able to do as a special prosecutor. But the Republicans, yet again, are being incredibly craven and contradicting themselves. 33 Senate Republicans signed a letter saying we need a special counsel. Half of the GOP conference signed a letter saying we need a special counsel.
But not the same guy.
No. Yes, the same guy, Brian Kilmeade. It was David Weiss that those senators wanted to be appointed to be a special prosecutor in this case. That's the whole point. But so they're like mad about the specifics now. And here you have Jeanine Pirro extra mad because apparently David Weiss already had the authority before to prosecute in DC and California, as Tarnov just explained, Tarlov. And then Tarlov comes back swinging. Take a look.
Would be a problem with anyone except for, I don't know, John Eastman and Rudy Giuliani if they were the special counsel. David Weiss
David
is a
Weiss
Trump
lied.
Appointed.
David Weiss
not.
Lied
he
to Jim.
Not.
Can I finish? He lied to Jim Jordan when he said he had all the power he needed. Because we know from an October 2022 meeting with the FBI, the IRS, and a contemporaneously made business record that he said he wasn't given permission to prosecute the other jurisdictions.
First of all, that came from a whistleblower who was not in the room when that happened. David Weiss,
you know,
confirmed.
What's not a lie? Well,
wait,
it's not a lie.
You know, it's not a lie that you're cutting me off.
Let me say this. You know, it's not a lie.
Finish her point first.
Go ahead.
Oh, that's very generous of you. Thank you. David Weiss hasn't lied, and Merrick Garland confirmed it today, saying he had all the powers that he asked for. I would have made him a special counsel, but he did not ask to be. So obviously something
so
changed.
So if he didn't ask, then he wasn't interested in getting justice.
Jessica,
you said.
Wow.
Ray, I'm gonna kick it to you. They're like, she's really handholding them on all of this. Like, it's a good day for justice because we're gonna get a full investigation. He can be prosecuted in two states. What more do you want?
I just read a comment. I'm sorry. Someone said I could taste the booze coming off of her breath. But you know, I mean, obviously there's no sense between any of them. And then Tarlov is there making excellent points. And you know, and when faced with actual facts, they all crumble and all they can do is laugh and scoff and say things that make absolutely no sense. And I'll just say, Merrick Garland, the Department of Justice has done everything they were supposed to do. When they're faced with this conflict, now they have to appoint a special counsel. And when this happens, you want to appoint a special counsel who is not of the same political party as you. You want someone who is appointed by, you know, a president from a former, you know, a president of the opposite party. These are the things that you're supposed to do. So much so that they appointed the exact guy the Republicans wanted them to appoint. And they're just crying and they're so unhappy. Again, when they got everything that they asked for.
Yes, absolutely. And as Tarlov explains, they would only be happy if it were John Eastman or Rudy Giuliani, which they would see no conflict of interest, even though both of them might be indicted in separate suits, not just in Georgia, as we just talked about, but from Jack Smith federally. Incredible stuff here. And yeah, they're just inventing new ways to be upset. Welcome back to the Damage Report. Francesca Fiorentini here with you in for John Iadarola, who again is on baby watch. Everyone send him and his fam lots of love. As well as Rayvanna is here. We got more news, more updates, specifically from this, the heinous fallout from the wildfires in Maui. So last week we covered the wildfires in Hawaii, specifically in Maui. And it has been an incredible humanitarian toll, but then also an incredible humanitarian effort to help the people of Maui, to send anything from donations to you know, goods that are needed. And I encourage everyone to definitely continue to do that. But so far, there have been 96 confirmed deaths from that fire, officials said on Sunday night. There's still people unaccounted for as search teams with cadaver dogs look for remains in decimated neighborhoods. The revised number of fatalities put the fire, which devastated the town of Lahaina, as the deadliest wildfire in modern US history, surpassing the 2018 Camp Fire in California that killed 85. And sadly, this is not going to be the deadliest wildfire, I think, of our lifetimes. As drought, extreme drought continues and climate chaos continues, this will only continue. But having hit such a historic town like Lahaina and such a and impacting so many people, disproportionately, I think, indigenous native Hawaiians, this is quite momentous and historic. So how did it happen, I think, is still up for discussion in terms of, you know, how this fire wasn't put out immediately, how it wasn't under control immediately. From the New York Times, one firefighter actually described how his truck tapped into a hydrant in Lahaina to try to contain a blaze that had taken root in a cluster of homes, only to find water pressure so weak that the fire promptly jumped beyond their efforts to contain it. Another firefighter who arrived on the scene after the fire was already raging said he encountered a scene of chaos and soon was told that there was no water to put the fires out. There was other factors too. Apparently there weren't evacuation orders in time or a sirens set up to warn of said emergencies. Those didn't actually go off. Clearly there was not a plan in order for the town of Lahaina to actually evacuate. And I think it is very telling given how much money goes to certain portions of Maui versus not. And yes, Lahaina, if you know of it, it is a massive tourist location, but often run not by big hotels or big chains or like your carnival cruises, but by like Hawaiians, you know, by Mauians, people who live there. So in some ways, I think it probably was, there was a massive divestment from that area. I wanted to turn though to people taking action. Ray, Jeff Bezos truly is digging deep into his pockets. His wife tweeted, or to put out, I guess, because it says Jeff and I, but it's Jeff Bezos' account. Jeff and I are heartbroken by what's happening in Maui. We're thinking of all the families that have lost so much and a community that has been left devastated. The immediate needs are so important, so is long-term building, blah, 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 blah. Jeff and I are creating a Maui fund and dedicating $100 million to help Maui get back on its feet now and over the coming years as the continuing needs reveal themselves. So Jeff Bezos is helping with $100 million. Now, some people were initially get mad at me and be like, what do you mean? That sounds like a lot of money. Ray, I don't know the stats particularly, but if someone, I'm sure chat can weigh in and everyone watching can weigh in. I'm pretty sure $100,000 is an afternoon for Jeff Bezos and the Amazon Corporation.
Right, relative to the amount of wealth he has, it's a tiny fraction for him. I mean, you know, comparatively to what we're able to donate compared to, you know, our limited income, you know, it's really something negligible. Not that it's not gonna probably immensely help the efforts of the people there. I'm not trying to undermine that, but like, you know, what I will say is that the people of Hawaii, the native people of Hawaii have been trying to raise the alarm for a long time now about, you know, they've been really trying to call on people to stop vacationing, stop coming to Hawaii. You know, they've been protesting against the military bases we have that are polluting the waters in Hawaii. And of course, we don't know the precise reason that these wildfires began. But of course, you know, the native people have been calling attention to man-made climate change, the pollution of their natural environment. And one thing that we saw was that the tourists in the area were prioritized in evacuation over the indigenous Hawaiians. So, I mean, we can literally just see, you know, the stark colonialism of this, you know, beautiful place and the prioritization of tourists over the native people. And the native people are the ones who are going to continue to suffer. They're the ones who lost their homes. They're the ones who've lost their entire livelihoods. And the New York Times instead decided to cover a woman looking through the rubble to find her Rolex watch, as opposed to, you know, the people who died and the people searching for their potentially deceased family members. I mean, if that's not an example of like framing of this in terms more favorable to American colonialism, I don't know what is.
And actually, I just wanted to skip to this video because there are conspiracy theories swirling as to how this fire was started. We're talking about like the broader context of the inequality and the history of colonialism in Maui itself, in Hawaii and as a whole. But there are a lot of theories moving around because there have to be, because somehow it can't just be that there was a hurricane and a downed power line started a massive wildfire, which let me tell you, it definitely can be that, because in California, while we don't have hurricanes, it's a lot of downed power lines and a lot of neglect from corporations like PG&E. So don't get me wrong, I feel it, but here is an interesting, and I want to get your take and everyone's take on this, because it's an interesting twist on this idea that no, this fire didn't start organically. Someone must have started it for a certain aim. Take a look.
People online are speculating the fires were deliberately started by the government. The majority of the properties damaged by the fires were highly sought after real estate locations that are estimated to be worth billions of dollars. Theories are spreading online alleging that the fires started far too suddenly and burned too harshly to be attributed to a regular wildfire. Videos are circulating of what looks like a last strike coming from space directly onto a house.
Okay, so there's a I don't know if Marge had anything to do with this, but apparently there's a space laser. Who knows if the Rothschilds created it, but there's a video, I guess, that's been circulating of something just beaming down and hitting there is no way to verify any of this stuff. But what we do know is, again, when you have neglected infrastructure combined with a hurricane and or, you know, a massive drought, which Maui's been undergoing, a wildfire is not completely out of the question. The part of that conspiracy theory video that does ring true, and I think this is what's messed up about conspiracy theories, is I think what you were mentioning earlier, Ivana, which is like, this is valuable property. And who is going to rebuild, right? Where is the $100 million that the Bezoses are contributing? Where is that gonna go to? Is that gonna be like, you know, a million per resident, or one of 500,000 to rebuild their homes? Who knows, right? My guess is it will not go directly to those folks. And my guess is all the corporations have been wanting to, and all the, you know, hotel chains have been wanting to move in, and other, you know, franchises have wanted to move in, will probably get their wish finally.
Right. And I think that, of course, that lends to, I don't want to call them nut jobs, but conspiracy theorists to think, of course, I mean, God, that video of the last strike is so absolutely absurd. People will believe anything they see on the internet. I think it's more what we see all the time, corporations taking advantage of a tragedy. And that's what we're going to see. So, you know, I implore people who want to help out, who want to donate to relief efforts, to be careful to what organizations you're giving to, you know, to look into how the funds are going to be distributed and make sure that you're not, you know, giving to an organization that's just going to funnel a bunch of money into, you know, large corporate, you know, developers trying to use this land to further, you know, tourism, which again, as I highlighted, the indigenous activists, the Native Hawaiian activists have been saying they really don't want to see. They are literally just saying, stop coming to Hawaii, please stop traveling to Hawaii. So just keep an eye out. If I know people out of the goodness of their own hearts really want to help, be mindful of where that money's going.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's pivot a little bit because there obviously Republicans have to capitalize on the Maui wildfire, and not in a good way, not in a relief effort fundraising way, not taking climate change seriously way, not taking tourism in Hawaii seriously way. Are they listening to those Native Hawaiians? No, they're using this as an effort to take digs and shots at President Joe Biden. So here is Lauren Boebert tweeting, there's a total crisis in Maui, 3,000 destroyed homes, 80 people dead. Where's Joe Biden? On vacation, of course. There's no bottom for this president. The least he could do is throw a roll of bounty at the people in the water trying to escape the fire, like any good president. But here is a side by side that another right winger posted, blue check mark, very key indicator, saying Biden was vacationing on a beach in Delaware today. Meanwhile, Maui has been completely destroyed by fires. 93 people have died and thousands have lost their homes. Yet Biden refused to give up his vacation and go to visit Maui residents in their time of need. Well, okay, couple things. One, that is Biden. He is on vacation. He does that a lot. In the summer, on the weekends, you know, one can remember when another president golfed a whole hell of a lot. But we've just been talking about how Hawaiians are like, please don't come. So I'm sure having to field a massive, like the convoy of Biden and his Secret Service team at a time when they're literally like trying to get any survivors or people or remains, human remains from the rubble. Probably not the time to go right now. Ray, I don't know your thoughts on this. I'll get into what Biden did do.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it, right? He would just be in the way. Also, the idea that he should have anticipated this was going to happen, and I hate having to constantly defend Biden, but the idea that he should have anticipated this was going to happen and not have been on vacation when it happened, I think is really silly. And yeah, you know, he deployed FEMA and that was the right response. He being there, he's not going to be able to rebuild these houses. He's too old to be searching through the rubble. And yeah, when the president goes anywhere, you know, they have to be very careful about who's around him. He has to fly Air Force One there. Not really a good place for him to be doing that now. Really, he would just be in the way. It would probably be the worst thing he could do to go there personally, as opposed to deploy the people who are going to be able to actually help start rebuild, start, you know, continuing the search to find people who are still missing.
Yeah, and the president has said that he is looking into a trip there. Of course, he will go there. The governor of Hawaii, Josh Green, said that he's received lots of support specifically from this administration. And Biden did have a statement last Thursday, basically when these fires broke out, saying, I want to say a word about the devastating wildfires that have claimed at least 36 lives. And that was again, you know, half a week ago. We have just approved a major disaster declaration for Hawaii, which will get aid into the hands of people desperately needing help now. They've lost anyone who's lost a loved one whose home has been damaged or destroyed is going to get help immediately. And I think, you know, final thoughts on this is aid is important. Rebuilding justly is even more crucial for the people of Maui. So that aid needs to continue, needs to help people rebuild their homes where they were, homes and businesses. And this cannot be aid that is going to people who don't need it. We've seen that happen. Hello, PPP loans. Anyway, let's take our second break, and there's more after this. Welcome back to the Damage Report with what remains of our first hour. God, this is, I have to say this because John says it, time has flown by, but has it? Has it? Very important, big weekend. Let's get into this. All the things that happened in Iowa. Take a look. So that was a chance of "We Want Trump," while Governor Ron DeSantis, whose campaign is fledgling, was cooking up some burgers at the Iowa County Fair, or one of the many different events in Iowa where the GOP has been for the last week, really. And over the weekend was no different. We're gonna get into some of the highlights and lowlights, if you will. That wasn't the only thing, however, though, that disrupted Ron DeSantis's just soaring campaign. I mean, it's soaring in the sense that there was a plane that flew over the fair with this on it. If you can't read that, it says "Be likable, Ron," which is very fun. That was right as he was about to, or as he was speaking with Governor Kim Reynolds of Iowa. DeSantis supporters scoffed as the plane flew overhead, reading "Be likable, Ron." Looking up in the sky, Matt Wells, the Washington County chair for DeSantis Iowa operation, muttered that, quote, "Trump people are degenerates." Because they said "be likable"?
Also, I think that's pretty sage advice for someone running to be the president of the United States.
Don't be weird, bro. Like, that's what I just have, like, I would have an edit on that. Like, don't be weird, Ron.
Don't say "hungry, Ron."
Oh God, that was actually fake. Do you know that? I think that was actually fake. But everything else is real. Putting fingers is real. Speaking to a child with ice cream and telling them that's a lot of sugar is real. Not knowing what to say after you meet someone for the first time. "Hey, okay, my name's Bill." "Oh, hey, Bill." Doopy doo. As we covered recently, like being at a hotel party drinking Coors Light and being like, "Oh, I'm usually in bed by this time. Am I gonna see you guys tomorrow? Cool, can I leave now?" Like, he can't be likable if he tried. Seriously. The back and forth, of course, is very fun, but there were some things that were a little weirder. Matt Gaetz was there with Donald Trump, actually, defending him, and basically arguing for political violence as if we needed someone to spell it out for us. Here he is in this beautiful backlit video. Take a look. And if you couldn't tell, that sort of like penguin outline of a man, that was Donald Trump there. As Matt Gaetz said, "Only by force will we take back." You know, it's almost like they need to, you know, descend. Are they talking about like descending on the Capitol building and trying to like stand on the dais? And they need like a dude with like bullhorns and face paint. Ravana, is it, have I seen that before? Where did I saw that? Was that a streaming show?
You know what? It's definitely ringing some bells for me. I can't quite place it though. Them trying to forcefully undermine democracy. I remember, maybe I have an image in my head of someone climbing up a wall and falling down.
Yeah, a few like police officers being hit with an American flag.
Right, right.
Where do you see that? That's gotta be God. That's weird. It's gonna be some show. But yeah, interesting, because there was a poll just recently that basically echoed Matt Gaetz's sentiment. People were asked squarely about their support for violence and if their preferred candidate lost in 2024. After all eligible votes were counted fairly, 20% of Republicans said violence may at least be a little justified, which I think is a fun polling trick. Should be like, would it be a little justified? Just a sweet little bit of violence. But when they were asked whether violence was justified if their preferred candidate lost because of unfair actions from political rivals, support for at least some violence rose to 37%, which call it 40%. It doesn't matter. They're just being worded the question a little bit differently. But effectively, we saw what happened in 2020. It's all the votes were counted, and then their candidate, who lost, said that there was political interference with zero evidence, as we of course now are getting even more evidence to the fact that there was zero evidence. So it's just like tomato, tomato, however you word it. If your political, if your candidate loses, at what point would Republicans accept the results? Aren't they going to cry wolf no matter what? And won't people like Donald Trump and like Carrie Lake, who we're gonna get to, won't they just, isn't this the third rail that they're consistently going to hit? I mean, unless four indictments and counting, which by the way is a TLC show at this point, unless four indictments and counting, like unless that actually means something and scares Republicans in the future.
Just to that point, the election was literally stolen from the Democrats in the year 2000. Literally stolen from them, and they rolled over and let the drunk fail son of George H.W. Bush rule our country for 8 years.
Change the course of this nation for all time. Like led to Obama, not super bad, but also led to Trump. Imploded the Republican Party. Don't get me started on the year 2000 and Al Gore. But change your light bulbs, guys. No, I won't, because of you, Al. But let's move on though, because this is kind of the highlight of the Iowa County Fair. Here is Carrie Lake, and she used her little moment in the spotlight. She's there in Iowa supporting Trump, I imagine, hoping for that vice presidential, sort of magic wand, fairy picking, whatever, to be chosen. Here she is, just sticking it to the mainstream media, and she's doing it by milking a cow.
Which one of you is from the New York Times? You know there's only two genders, right?
I just take pictures.
There's only two genders, and they know that in Iowa. I challenge the New York Times reporter and the Washington Post reporter to try to milk a cow. And then try to milk a bull and see how that goes.
Ew. Carrie Lake, I'd like to see you milk a bull and see how that goes.
Ew.
You should prove your point. Why don't you go first?
It's just like, I mean, I'm so thankful she did not win her race, because she's one of the dumbest people in politics, and that's saying something considering all of the other people in politics who she's competing against. I think it's really funny, because I don't think that, you know, I hope that Trump doesn't get reelected, but even if he does, I don't think that she would become his vice president. So, I mean, I think that the Iowa fanfare is always really silly. I think that it's a particularly silly right now when the Republican Party, it's clear who's going to be their candidate. Ron DeSantis slipped in the polls to below Vivek Ramaswamy. He had to bus fake supporters into Iowa and pay them to pretend to be supporting him. I mean, I think that I'm excited to watch the Republican debates, because it's nothing but not entertainment. So, you know, that's all coming. That'll be fun to watch. Bad for democracy, potentially. But, you know, the whole Iowa thing this year feels like such a farce. They already have their candidate. It's going to be Trump.
Yeah, but if we could see a bull being milked by Carrie Lake, that would be fun. And if in the debates they just prove there are only two genders by getting a bunch of different farm animals that they can milk and touch the genitals of, I just feel like, I'm a big old lib, and I do feel like gender is fluid and a construct, and like, you know, I support trans rights and stuff and trans liberation, but like, I could be swayed if there's a lot of farm animals on the stage with Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump and Vivek Ramaswamy. And if they could just, like, I need like a chicken, it'd be like an old McDonald's situation. It's like Noah's Ark of like, transphobes. And I would really like to see that.
Is she also arguing that there's no meaningful difference between the mental capacity and faculties of a barnyard animal and a human? It might be true for her, but for the, I'd like to think that I have like a little bit more self-awareness than a cow being milked at the Iowa State Fair.
First of all, that cow absolutely believes in trans rights. I just want to say that that cow is woke AF, super ally. All right, well, that's all the time we have for the first hour, but there is more in the aftermath. Everybody, don't go anywhere. If you're on linear, bye bye. But if you're on YouTube, the show continues.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.